Support for this podcast and the following message come from Allianz Travel Insurance. An unexpected medical emergency can cost you. It can cost you even more when you're traveling abroad. Protect your trip at AllianzTravelInsurance.com.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. This next interview is our last one in our wrap month, and our guest is Benny the Butcher. Benny is from Buffalo, New York. Alongside Conway the Machine and West Side Gunn, he's a member of the hip-hop collective Griselda. Benny is a hard worker, incredibly prolific. He tours a ton. He's not even 40 yet, and he's got dozens of LPs and mixtapes and other releases to his name. In fact, since 2009, he hasn't gone a single year without releasing something. All that is even more extraordinary when you consider his health. Benny suffers from severe asthma. He's been to the emergency room more times than he can count. He's had to cancel shows and interviews. It's hard to imagine being an MC with asthma. It's especially hard to be an asthmatic MC with a flow as complex and fierce as Benny the Butcher's. Benny's latest album is Tana Talk 4. Came out last year. Here was the first single from it, Johnny P's Caddy.
Butcher coming. This ain't my story about rags to riches, more about how I mastered physics. In a game I used to train like Rocky, catching chickens. I was nice, but they was right when they told me that rap was business. I had 10 bands in my stash when I passed over half a million. Come easy, no good, don't be surprised I'll last you. It's like they put out a smash, then they gone in a flash, admit it. And then they make
track. Benny the Butcher, welcome to Bullseye.
Yes, sir, man. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to have you here. I'm glad that you have some cold water there. You just walked in the door. It's rare that we have a guest so just walked in the door, like you sat down, asthma inhaler, handed some water.
And a blunt. Don't forget that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you're not. My studio is too small. You'd be stinking it up. So, well, I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much.
Yes, man. It took me a while to get here, man. I had some difficulties going on, but I'm here, baby.
Are all recording studios in Buffalo, New York, do they all look like Victorian mansions? Because that's what it looks like you're recording from.
Yo, and this kind of feels like one. Like, this is like a, what is this, like a suede curtain right next to me. But, man, this is the home recording studio of the famous Google Dolls.
Now we're talking. Tell me about your asthma. Is that something that you've dealt with since you were young?
Yeah, it runs in my family. And honestly, I haven't always taken care of it the way I supposed to. So it's at a point where, you know what I mean, it's bad. I'm not going to lie, it's bad. I was just in a hospital like 2-3 days ago. I'm in a hospital maybe 3-4 times a year. The time before that, couple nights ago, I went to the hospital, to the emergency room when I was on a thank God I made a tour. I was in an emergency room in Greece. And then I came back across the water, and I was watching something on the internet. It was like, never go to the emergency room in Greece. I'm like, damn, been there, done that. But yeah, man, asthma's crazy.
There's a lot of rappers with asthma. Pharrell Monch was on this show, and he always has an inhaler on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Tyler, the Creator, has asthma. I read that Big Daddy Kane has asthma.
Yeah. Jay-Z, Biggie Smalls. Yeah. I know, like, the asthma lineage in hip-hop.
I think it is particularly an interesting challenge for a rapper because rap is so much about controlling and managing your breath. I mean, all singing is, but I think rap in particular is, like, built on being able to manage your breath in extraordinary ways, you know? And when your breath is also like threatening to kill you at any moment, it's a difficult path to walk.
That make it difficult. I'm not gonna lie. It's like sometimes before I get on the stage, I'm thinking like, how am I gonna make this work? But I do it. So it's been maybe once at the most. I can't remember it. Twice, but I know one time I had to cancel a show in Detroit for asthma. But a lot of times I do shows, like when I'm a little short of breath, I can handle it. So if I ever cancel a show, it's because it's like, damn, I was damn near about to die. I can't, you know what I mean? I can't even function.
What do you have to do to manage it?
This is what I need to do. I need to take my medicine. I need to take the prednisone. I need to take the Advair. They give me the, when you take the Advair every day, man, you could be good. Some people like leave the asthma pump at home. Like I can't do nothing without my asthma pump. So I need to stay on top of the Advair, the daily medicine. I need to stay on top of that. And, you know, man, lay off these marijuana cigarettes maybe, but you know, I'm trying, baby.
We'll be back in just a second. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR. This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
This message comes from Schwab. It's easy to invest in ideas you believe in with Schwab investing themes, like online music and videos, artificial intelligence, and electric vehicles. Choose from over 40 customizable themes. More at schwab.com.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out, what's going on around the world and at home. 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First, every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.
This marathon, so let's see who first to the finish. If it's less than 100 racks, it don't deserve your attention, because burdens come with it. My second test was serving a sentence. My first was make a brick jump like it was hurt.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm talking to Benny the Butcher of Griselda.
Before you heard of me, shoe boxes stacked with racks sitting vertically in them. I'm fresh out of luck. I'm here because I deserve to be. I sat back a vet and watched beginners winning my belts. Burnt my bridges, came back a good swimmer like Phelps. You know the feeling, young black male, what y'all dealing? Take your whole life to get it, it only lasts you a minute. In the kitchen counting cash with cats with backward agendas. Put a Benz in a brick, then toss it back in the blender. That was us, next to a big like I was.
You're in Buffalo, New York, where you're from right now. How much of your time do you spend there?
I maybe spend maybe like 20-30% of my time here. My family is still here, my children, my mom. My studio is here. The studio was more so set up for the artists and for the staff to run day to day. But I spend about 20-30% of my time. I spend a lot of time back home in Atlanta or on the road. But I sometimes come here just to get inspired. Sometimes I come here and just sit in a crib for a day and nobody even know I'm here. I don't let them know I'm here until maybe the next day or something. Just come here to collect my thoughts. It's so crazy that I just wanted, like, how hard I just wanted to get away from this place a few years ago. And now just to settle everything down, I might just come back. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
It can feel so much more different when you leave and come back as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Come back and see, when I come back now, it's like a totally different city because I'm a totally different person. I'm not hanging around in the same places I used to. You know what I mean? I'm not doing it. It's like a different Buffalo for me. I'm not going to lie. This is how I'll describe it. I'm not even going to lie to you. It's like rich people Buffalo. You know what I'm saying? Like before I was like, you know, we was in the hood. We was doing East Side Buffalo things. But now I come here and I'm hanging with the Buffalo aristocrats. It's crazy to me.
Who are the Buffalo aristocrats? Are we talking about? I mean, I got to assume the Buffalo Bills, comedian Joe Pera. That's all I got, though.
You got the Bills. You got the Buffalo celebrities. But you also have, like, doctors here. You know what I'm saying? You also have, like, it's another guy here who has a clothing company, my boy E. Ross. He comes back and forth to Buffalo. But you know me, he makes a lot of money and he comes back and I can see the same thing that I'm talking about in me and him. Just you know, like public officials. Just anybody you could name who's doing things. It's like social media influencers who I didn't even know existed. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, they write from here. And, you know, it's like one small circle, just how like the hood and the ghetto is the same thing. It's like it's one small circle of like people doing extraordinary things, but they all like hang out at the same places. And, you know what I'm saying? And do the same thing.
How many people did you live with when you were a kid?
Well, my mom had 8 children. So think about that. Maybe it was always like 6 or 7 kids in a house at a time, at a point in time. My mom, maybe one of my aunts living there, my stepdad. Yeah. So maybe like 7 people. I remember one time I lived in a house with 11 people.
Where were you among your siblings in age?
I'm the second oldest. Rest in peace to my older brother, Machine Gun Black. He passed away October 2006. And ever since then, I've been like my mom's oldest living child. But he died when he was 24 and I was 21. And I'm 38 now, so that's how long I've been like my mom's oldest living child.
Your mom was using when you were a kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How old were you when you realized this about your mom?
Yeah, I had to be like 5 or 6 years old. 5 or 6 years old, guaranteed, because we still lived in a neighborhood. I remember the house that we lived in. It was in Langfield Projects, and I know how old I was living at that apartment, and it was that apartment specifically.
What did that even mean to you when you were that age?
I didn't know how detrimental it was. I just knew my mom was doing something wrong. I didn't know addiction was a disease. I didn't know nothing, really. I just knew it was wrong because it was talked about on TV and it was say no to drugs and I knew it was drug paraphernalia. I just knew it was wrong. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, when you're a kid like that, you think your mom could do no wrong. Everything she's doing was right. So it's kind of like, damn, my mom doing something wrong. I kind of like make me look at her with the side eye. You know what I mean? You know how kids are honest. You know what I'm saying? I kind of like looked at her with a side eye like you're doing something you're not supposed to be doing, mommy. What you doing?
You and your older brother must have had times when you had to take care of your siblings.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like look after. Mm-hmm. Definitely look after. I was in a foster home for a minute. And at the point in time, my mom had 4 children. And then we all got to stay together. So, you know, definitely. And I was 9 years old. But I definitely, that's the first time I felt the sense of, I got to look after my little brother and my little sister. And I know my brother felt like he had to look after all of us. Yeah, definitely, man. And I do that now. I do that now. I try to look out for my sisters and brothers as much as I can right now. But definitely, man, we had to look out for each other. So it was 8 of us.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's Bullseye. My guest is rapper Benny the Butcher.
Who can I depend on? Marry the game and death my in-laws. Feds don't got no mercy for a big dog. Kite from my man, he said I'm at where I deserve to be. Jammed up, he about to take the plea for a 30 piece. My heart dropped when they put them TNT fans up. Now we getting caught by them TMZ cameras. Barely made it, we succeeded with the least chances. My team got a will strong enough to beat cancer. Masters in dope. Before that, I had a bachelor's in... I'm like Ali, I fight better with my back on the ropes. Labels, I pass them up, it's like they after the float. And my legacy...
You've rapped a lot about street selling drugs. And a lot about the depth of your conflicted feelings about it.
Right.
When did you start selling and when did you stop?
I started when I was 14. When I moved to Georgia, I stayed in a foster home ever since. When I went to 9, I left my mom's house when I was 9 years old. And when I finally moved back, I was 14. So when I moved back in my mom's custody, and things weren't ideal. My boy, I was moving back from Atlanta, and my best friend, City Boy, told me. He was 15 at the time. He told me, like, yo, you know, your mom not doing good, so you're going to have to, like, step it up and help her. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it's like you got to, like, grow up fast that you're back. Because he seen that my first few days back, I was playing football, eating ice cream. He told me where to get some drugs I could sell. And I went to get a double up. And I started that, not that day, but I started like that summer when I was 14.
I mean, Benny, you're talking about, frankly, you're talking about the stuff that 14-year-olds should just get to do. I mean, like, I'm 42 and I like eating.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm qualified to play football anymore, but maybe ride a bike.
That's what I was ready to do. I was ready to come back and be a kid. It was summer, the summer of 1999. I was turning 15 later on that year, and I was back with all my old friends that I grew up with, who I haven't lived. It was on Montana. I moved back on Montana Avenue, and I haven't lived on the street in like a couple years. So I was happy to be with my old friends, and I didn't want to like face the reality of what was going on. I knew, like, my boy City Boy, I knew he was like ahead of his time, and he was doing that. And I didn't run behind him and chase and do it because he was doing it. I recognized he was doing it, and I didn't want no parts of it because I'm still a kid. You're still a kid when you're 14. So I was ready to be a kid.
How engaged were you with the risks and consequences of what you were up to?
The consequences, honestly, man, you know, I don't know if people tell the truth like this, but they weren't that real to me because everybody was doing it, you know? It wasn't that real. And when I finally did get caught and caught with some drugs, by the time I was 16, you know, it was a slap on the wrist. And for a 16-year-old, I ran a pretty elaborate operation, you know, so just to get probation for that, you know, like, we knew those things. You know, we had friends who was hanging with us toting guns. And so it was like the consequences wasn't that real. And we accepted them as far as what we believed them to be. Because, you know, tell me back then, my brother's going to be dead. I'm going to spend 10 years in and out of prison, a 10-year period of my life, my 20s in and out of prison, and this is going to happen or that's going to happen. I'm not sure I would have jumped in that how I did. So, you know, the consequences, you know, and the dangers of it wasn't that real to us until we grew to have things to lose. You feel what I'm saying? Until I had children. That's when the consequences get real, is when you got kids. That's when I started. And I was still going to, my daughter's first birthday was when I was in prison. So that's when it started to hurt I started to feel like a failure in life. Like everybody want to be there for their kid's first birthday. You know, I'm never going to get that back, ever. No matter how good our relationship is right now, no matter what I got, you know, I'm never going to get that back. You know, so until you got to lose, man, the consequences really is nothing.
How old were you when your older brother died?
I was 22. I was 22. They called me to the counselor's office. Now, I'm in federal prison at the time. I got a cell phone in the prison. So when they called me up to the counselor's office and tell me that my family want to speak to me, first thing I'm thinking of is like, why y'all didn't just text me? Why you call me if you want to speak to me? And I remember my baby mother, she asked me how I'm feeling. You know, now I'm talking on the phone with her in front of the counselor, and she asked me how I'm feeling. I'm thinking like, now I'm getting annoyed. I'm like, how I'm feeling? I'm like, why? I can't say it in front of the counselor, but I'm thinking like, why you didn't just call me? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm feeling good. Like, how you feeling? And she was like, they must didn't tell you. And I'm like, tell me what? Then I look at the counselor, then he like look away at me. Now I really want to know. I'm like, tell me what? And then she told me. You know what I'm saying? And that's a feeling that never goes away. You know? Because my relationship with my brother is he was a protector, man. Whoever he loved and liked and hung with and spent his time with, he felt responsible for those people. He felt responsible for those people. That's why Westside Gunn talk about him the way he do. You know what I mean? Because, you know what I mean? Like, they had that type of relationship too. Man. And coming home after a bit, and you don't got your older brother. I was still a baby boy. I was only 22 when I came home. Yeah, my older brother, you know what I mean? Not around. You know, I kind of feel like naked. I kind of feel like bare. I didn't know who to trust. We didn't know what happened at the time, so I didn't really get answers. So it was a scary time. You know what I'm saying? Paranoia. Not being able to sleep. And when I am able to sleep, like I had a dream about him for a year straight. It's crazy.
You only had a few months left in your sentence when he was killed, and you weren't able to go to his funeral.
I was due to be released 90 days. I was getting out of prison in 90 days, right? With no parole, no nothing. And they told me I was a flight risk. And to be honest with you, I'm gonna keep it real with you. I don't know if it would have been good to say goodbye to my brother, but I'm not sure if I wanted to be there, you know, and see my mom crying like that. I'm not sure I wanted to see that. You know, my grandmother there. You know, his children there. Nah, I'm not sure if I could have handled that. I'm not gonna hold you. You know, that tore me apart.
He was a rapper as well, and a good one. I've only heard a little bit of him rapping, but he's a talented guy. Did it change your relationship to making music when he was killed?
Hell yeah. It made me, you know, he was also one of my biggest supporters. He was also definitely, you know what I'm saying? He, like, when he started rapping, when he started getting good, people would tell him, like, yo, you getting good. He always was like, no, you should hear my little brother, you know? So definitely, you know, I know him, that's my brother. I could still, like, just imagine how he'd react, and I could still hear him in my head. So, you know what I mean? That keeps me pushing, you know what I'm saying? That's a driving unit for me, you know what I mean?
We've got to go to a quick break. Benny the Butcher recorded a response to a classic Biggie Smalls song, and when we come back, we'll hear it and break it down. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from NPR sponsor Allianz Travel Insurance. From quick weekend getaways to international vacations, an annual travel plan from Allianz Travel Insurance can protect your adventures for the next 365 days. And with benefits starting as close as 100 miles from home, you can have peace of mind wherever you go. Get a quote at AllianzTravelInsurance.com.
Greatest Trek is the podcast for all your modern Star Trek needs. It's funny, informative, and now it's also timely.
That's because every Friday, right after the release of a new episode of Strange New Worlds, Picard, Lower Decks, Discovery, or Prodigy, we bring you a review of that episode.
There's some great new Star Trek coming up, and we're going to cover all of it.
You'll like our show because we're both former video producers, so we bring a lot of insight into the production and filmmaking aspects to these episodes.
And we also have a very refined sense of humor, so we make lots of delightful fart jokes along the way.
So come see why Greatest Trek is one of the most popular television recap podcasts on all of the internet.
Subscribe to Greatest Trek at MaximumFun.org or in the podcast app you're using right now.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. If you're just joining us, my guest is Benny the Butcher. He's an acclaimed MC and a founding member of the hip-hop collective Griselda. His 2022 mixtape Tana Talk 4 features contributions from J. Cole, Diddy, and fellow Griselda member Boldy James. He also just announced a new album, Everybody Can't Go, set to be released later this year. Let's get back into my conversation with Benny the Butcher.
I was listening to one of the singles from Tana Talk 4, your record from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like a, it is a reimagining of the famous Biggie song, 10 Crack Commandments, called 10 More Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
You have Diddy on the record.
Yes.
And like other people have reimagined this song in different ways. You mm-hmm. know, it's a great format. But like you start by getting into these kind of nitty gritty things about selling crack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, that's in the spirit of the original song. Like, it's like these sort of like, be careful to do this things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be careful on social media is one of them, right?
Right, right.
Starting to get old, 14, just lead by example. Cause you could be richer, but my hand don't equal triple the financial difference. 13, tricky, big, couldn't even approach it. When he was slinging and toting, this wasn't even a focus. No social media posting, greedy emotions. Chase fame, and not the money that's broke. That be on hope. Rule number 12, I noticed when a little 12. Stand for something, I fall for anything. Respect is like a
shit. I'm wondering as I'm listening to this, like, what is it? Where is he going with this song? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard. It's very easy to, it's very easy to misstep because it's very easy to like either make this record about why you should make easy money selling people crack.
Right.
And it's also very easy to make this record about why drugs are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, crack cocaine is at least significantly bad, but like, you know, it's not much of a song.
Right.
And where you go with the song is essentially you have to get out.
Y'all don't get no ideas. You gotta live the way I live, the talk that I just did. 10 more crack commandments.
Yeah. Check this out, it's all in the mindset, you know? It's all in the mindset. Can't judge people for how they got it. My daddy used to be a hustler, you feel me? But like, we a different generation, a different time. We ain't gotta repeat the past, the crack era.
It's not a judgmental song and it's not a celebratory song.
Exactly.
It ultimately is a song about you got to get yourself out of that situation because it doesn't go anywhere good.
Right. That's the number one rule. Like, remember all the movies back in the day when a guy, he just wanted his $50,000. No, that's how all the old movies started. That's how the nature of the business started. It wasn't a drug, being a drug dealer wasn't a destination job. Like, no, you do this for this a point of time and then you move on. You know, that was lost. You feel me? In real life and in the music. I just wanted to point that out. That's why I made it the last rule that I stated. It's like, don't ever forget that we only do this because we don't have the opportunities to do that. A lot of people get in the game just to be in the game. Social media created that window to other lives, to other norms, just to other everything. You know what I'm saying? And not only social media, technology, just a whole bunch of other things that we can do that we don't got to sell drugs and kill each other no more. You know what I'm saying? To be successful, to be rich, or to be better in our community, or to, you know what I'm saying? So I really want people to know that. You know, these dudes, they be out here, they get their little money and they do what they do. I get it, but, you know, some of those guys are stand-up guys. Or just because you got money and you a tough guy, you know, that don't mean, like, use your power in a wrong way. You know, you see it every day. These guys in neighborhoods that they don't belong in, you know, carrying pistols and end up getting caught with these pistols. And I'm an advocate for the hustlers. You know, like you said, it's not a, I wasn't bigging the game up. I wasn't on the game, I was just letting people know my space, where I stand. And I really want people to know, like, you got to get out the game.
I mean, I think part of why you are able to share that is because your own story has all of the pain associated with that game. I mean, like, it's not just even you having been to prison or your brother having been killed, but your mother having been an addict.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know every side to drug abuse. I know every side. I done been in NA meetings with my mom as a kid. I done graduated the program myself, having to be like in prison. That's a certificate you need. I done went back to prison with that certificate and even taught the class before. You know what I mean? Like, I know every side to that. You're right, every side.
Benny the Butcher, I sure appreciate your time and your candor. It was really nice to get to talk to you.
Man, definitely, man. I enjoy your interview style, Jesse, man. I like that. You're a smooth guy, man. Easy to talk to.
Benny the Butcher, his next album, Everybody Can't Go, is set to be released later this year. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. I just made an appointment to get an updated COVID shot and a flu shot for this autumn. I hope you will go and do the same and help protect yourself and everyone around you. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Brianna Paz. We get booking help from Mara Davis. And hey, if you're in Los Angeles or environs, here's some cool news. We are joining LAist 89.3. We are so thrilled to be back on the air in our hometown of Los Angeles. Thanks, LAist. Our interstitial music is by DJ W, also known as Dan Wally. Dan remixed the latest EP from the Baltimore hardcore band Turnstile and has been posting clips on his Instagram of the samples he used for the remix. Check out the instrumentals on his Bandcamp. Just go to Bandcamp and search for DJ W Sounds. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation, written and recorded by the Go Team, thanks to them and to their label Memphis Industries. And Bullseye is on Instagram. I hope you will take a look for us there. You can see pictures from behind the scenes and clips from upcoming stuff and all kinds of fun stuff. We're on IG at Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. You can also find us on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
In this country, some truths aren't self-evident. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as wide-ranging and real as the people who tell them, we celebrate the Black experience for all its soul and richness. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.